we will have a presentation by our superintendent, Dr. Dan Murad.
It is truly an honor and privilege to welcome all of you this evening and to thank you for your interest in our school district. As a district, we understand our responsibility to connect and engage with you, and we know how important it is that there is trust between this venerable institution called the Madison Metropolitan School District and our community, you, our community members. I have had the privilege of serving as your superintendent for the past 18 months. I want you to know how much I appreciate all people have done, not only to welcome us to this community, but also to tell me, your superintendent, what is important to you. And while I know at times there can be challenges in knowing if we are hearing each other's viewpoint, my commitment will simply be to continue to listen and to continue to learn from you. When I was going through the superintendent search process here, I shared a quote from Tatanka Ayotok, Chief Sitting Bull, that is apt tonight. Let us put our minds together and see what kind of life we can create for our children. In the context of why we gather this evening, the key word in this statement is the word us. For our children to grow well, they need us working together. They need us holding important conversations about them, our children, and they need us demonstrating ways that we can deal with our differences befitting of the types of messages that we want children to hear from us. Put ideas on the table. Respect differences. Listen to each other. For isn't this what we teach children about getting along? And this needs to be the type of relationship that we have with each other if we're going to do the right work for our kids. Tonight we gather for a State of the District presentation, our first in recent past. The idea for holding this type of annual presentation came in a plan the Board of Education approved regarding how they would reorganize themselves and how they would do their work. Our goal is to provide an annual State of the District presentation, and just as our students, we hope to learn tonight how to do this better next year. So if you have any feedback on how this went, we certainly would welcome that. Before getting into tonight's presentation, let me now take a minute to focus on the people to my right, the Board of Education. Not only tonight is tonight about carrying forward with an idea that they agreed to do, holding an annual update about our district for our community, but it is also about taking a minute to thank our Board of Education. In my joining this community, this board committed to working consistent with what the research calls for in the way of effective school board, a focus on student achievement, knowing about effective school practices, and creating a board superintendent leadership team. While we still have much to learn about these ideas, tonight is a time when we can celebrate the Board of Education's understanding and commitment about effective school board work. There is more to say about this, however. In a time when we are clearly challenged by funding decisions made by the state, in a time when the federal government has provided us with stimulus money with the idea that it cannot be used to solve the problems that we face with our annual budget, in a time when some would shirk from important conversations about the needs for our children, such as early learning programs like four-year-old kindergarten, this board has stayed the course and has not let this difficult time we are in cause us to stop talking about what is needed for our children. Please join me now in thanking the Madison Metropolitan School District Board of Education for all they do for this great organization and for their commitment to the children. Their work is not easy, and at times it comes with no thanks. Let's not let that happen tonight. Thank you, Board of Education. Thank you very much. And tonight provides an opportunity to thank others. I want to publicly express my deep gratitude to all staff members of the Madison Metropolitan School District, and in particular to those that I have the pleasure of working very closely with on a daily basis. No matter where, though, I have observed great care for children. I have observed a tireless attitude. I have observed qualities of wanting to improve. Now, also, please join me in thanking all the staff members of this great institution. I want to take a second to thank the great students and family members who have made the decision to have their children educated in our district. We cannot thank you enough for your trust and for your willingness to share your ideas with us. I believe there is more we can directly do together, and in a plan I will soon share with the board, I will present ideas about how we can more closely work together, you, our parents, and our students, on behalf of the great young people of this community. And students, we thank you for keeping us young, and for all you do to help your schools become better places and to help your community. I have truly been amazed in the time that I've been here by your commitment to service. Please join me in thanking our great students and family members of this school district. And tonight, without mentioning names, we must look within this room because there are many partners that have joined us for this presentation. Hosting of President Obama, the district presentation. Truly, the Wright staff have been wonderful in welcoming home. And thank you, Wright staff, and please join me in thanking them. And now it's time to provide our State of the District presentation. Tonight's presentation will be shared by Assistant Superintendent Pam Nash, Sue Applenath, and Eric Hass, and by people from our school district who are willing to share their personal statements about our school district. In a while, we're going to spend a lot of time looking at some numbers. Numbers are one thing, and they're critically important. No doubt, they're critically important to knowing how well we're doing as a school district. Tonight, though, we want to expand that and to be able to hear from people directly that have experienced our school district. We'll do this both at the beginning and as a closing activity. And it's now my pleasure to have Kimberly Lee, a parent of two students at Hawthorne, come forward. Jeanette Ugalde, a 12th grade student at East High School, and Michelle Simon, a parent at Higa. If you could please come forward, they have some statements that they want to share with you about their experiences with the Madison Metropolitan School District. Please join me in welcoming Kimberly.
Good evening, everybody. I am a parent of two children at Hawthorne Elementary School, and I appreciate this opportunity because parents are important too, and we know what's best for our children, what can help them succeed in their future. And as a parent, I would like to say thank you for letting us be a part of it and to have our say. Hawthorne means to me a multicultural school setting with teachers and parents on the same page with one common goal, the growth and development of our children to strive for perfection. It's about teachers who care about our children's future. Learning is the school's top priority. Then comes safety and fun. No one is refused due to race, color, or creed. Everybody is important here, and parents' input are in high regards. Doing volunteer work keeps parents and teachers working closely together to ensure our children reach their highest potential. That's why Hawthorne means that much to me.
Our experience with the Madison School District, in particular Higa School, has been very positive. My husband and I have two boys who are in first and second grade. When they were younger, we seriously considered them. But as kindergarten grew closer, we decided to give Madison School a try. We are excited to say that both of our boys have benefited from caring teachers and staff who actually teach them at their age. They also have made many friends and have learned how to relate, respect, and have fun with kids of special needs and from different backgrounds or family situations than their own. As a parent who is in the school quite often, I am very glad that we made the decision to try to do this.
of classes like chemistry throughout high school was a challenge. Since I arrived in Madison at the age of 10, letting EMA was a challenge.
And Jeanette, thank you very much for framing tonight's conversation about the Madison Metropolitan School District. We do appreciate the experiences that you're having, and we look forward to the continued dialogue with you about the best way to ensure that your children are educated well and that you are educated well as a student. Our mission statement. Our mission is to cultivate the potential in every student to thrive as a global citizen, by inspiring a love of learning and civic engagement, by challenging and supporting every student to achieve academic excellence, and by embracing the full richness and diversity of our community. This mission statement speaks to many things. It was developed as part of our entire strategic planning process, which began about a year ago. And many of you that were involved with that process have decided to join us tonight, and obviously we're very thankful. That said, though, the mission speaks to the need to ensure many things. To ensure a focus on all children so they may thrive in the world they are about to inherit from us as global citizens. The mission speaks to a need for having a dual focus, ensuring that our students learn, when we say inspiring a love of learning, and also ensuring that our students become good citizens in that term civic engagement. The mission also speaks to what we feel is a great opportunity in the Madison Metropolitan School District. And that opportunity is to learn about differences and by embracing the full richness and diversity of our community. The final phrase in our mission statement. One of our key assets as a school district is the fact that our children can learn about differences by being in schools that are very diverse. And while we realize there can be certain challenges with our diversity, it is also important to point out the key need for our students to learn about different people, about their culture, about their languages, about who they are as people. Our viewing of diversity as an asset is based on a fairly simple student-centered notion. The world that children are inheriting from us is a world of vast difference. It is not a world of sameness. And the more chances we can provide to have students learn about differences when they are young, the better prepared our students will be in their adult lives. We owe this to our children, and our district can provide this. This mission statement was developed, as I said, as part of our recent strategic planning process. Part of this planning process also caused us to look at what we believe in as a school district. We believe that excellent public education is necessary for ensuring a democratic society, the belief in the value of public education. We believe in the abilities of every individual in our community and the value of their life experiences. We believe in an inclusive community in which all have the right to contribute. We believe we have a collective responsibility to create and sustain a safe environment that is respectful, engaging, vibrant, and culturally responsive. We believe that every individual can learn and that they will grow as learners. We believe in continuous improvement informed by critical evaluation and reflection. We believe that resources are critical to education and we are responsible for their equitable and effective use. And finally, we believe in culturally relevant education that provides the knowledge and skills to meet the global challenges and opportunities for the 21st century. With that as a backdrop, our mission and what we believe, our purpose tonight is to provide important information about our district to you, our community, and to share information about our future priorities. Let's begin this journey with a review of who, in fact, do we serve in this school district. And what we have up on the overhead, and you have it in your PowerPoint presentation, is information about the students we serve. And we come to see by that information how we have changed as a school district, not just in our race ethnic differences. We're in 1999-2000, 66% of our students were majority white Caucasian students. And today that percentage is 50%, which should cause us to have some very interesting conversations as we go forward, even using the term majority. What will that term be used for? What will it mean? 10 years ago, 6% of our students were Hispanic, and today 15%. What's interesting is the Dane County Census data. People of color, 11%. If the community truly wants and needs to understand, and we hope they do, about how this community will change and evolve, spend time with us. Come get to know the children of this community and their vast differences and their vast strengths, and at times with some of the challenges that I'll discuss with you later. In our school district, we have 65 different language groups spoken. We have 16% of our school district whose English is not their native language, and that compares to 6% for the rest of the state of Wisconsin. 47% of our children today qualify for free and reduced lunch, compared to 34% for the state, and compared to about 28% 10 years ago. You can see how we've evolved and changed as a school district. 17% of our students are with disabilities. And of course, this tale also needs to be told around some success stories. Academic success: Madison students surpass their state peers in the percentage of students scoring in the highest performance categories, advanced, in 13 of 15 tests on basic skills. 20% or more Madison High School students take advanced courses compared to the state average, and a significantly higher percentage, 29%, compared to the state average, pass advanced placement exams, demonstrating college-level proficiency. We have more than 7 times the National Merit Scholar semifinalists in a district our size would have on average. And finally, MMSD students significantly outperform other students on the ACT college entrance exam, 13% higher than the U.S. average and 7% higher than the Wisconsin average. Truly, there's a lot to say about positive things that bring for our learners. This conversation of our school district cannot be separated from who provides service to our kids in our school district. I just want to emphasize a couple things on this chart. First, an error, and that is when you see the line MSCR, where it talks about FTEs, that should have shown as non-applicable, because at 1807, they're mainly part-time staff students and working at Madison School and Recreation Program, where we show 2,570 teachers doing the mission work of the school, 140 administrators, 214 custodians, 590 education assistants, 146 work in our food service program. There's a lot of people because we are a human resource intensive proposition called public school. Let's just go a step deeper about some of the quality of our staff. I really like that percentage, 55% of full-time teachers with at least one master. It's a statement about their interest in continuing to learn. This year, we have a Wisconsin Elementary School Teacher of the Year. We've had 4 Milken Family Foundation winners since 2000, 17 Cole Teacher Fellows since 2000. We have 30 National Board Certified Teachers, and being the second largest district, it's nice to know that we have the second largest number of National Board Certified Teachers. And we have a whole myriad of other teachers that have been recognized for their excellence in their work. You know, everything good and just that happens in a school district happens by what adults do. And to know that we have adults that are committed to improving their practice certainly means a great deal. Before getting a little bit more into data, we will be providing quite a bit of data today, I want to take a minute to just review our mission work going forward. This is a slide about our future priorities. And where this comes from, these are the 5 priority strategies. All students reach their highest potential, and we eliminate achievement gaps. Around initiatives for achievement for all, improving how students transition, and improving adult-student relationships. improving academic achievement for all students and ensuring student engagement and student support. The focus in this area is improving our efforts in the areas of curriculum, instruction, and assessment. Implementing a formal system to support and inspire continuous development of effective teaching and leadership skills of all staff. Our professional development commitment, and within that strategy, all another related strategy in terms of minority staff recruitment and retention. A commitment to rigorously evaluating programs, services, and personnel, and vigorously pursuing the resources necessary to achieve our mission. And finally, promote, encourage, and maintain systems and practices that serve to unify and strengthen our school, the programs, our departments, services, and the district as an entire whole. Those represent priorities. If you go to the website, look at our strategic plan. Each of them has an action plan associated with them, and tonight I will not be going through those plans. Because in the end, our success as a school district is based on how our students are doing. And most of the remainder of our presentation will focus on trying to answer that question. Sort of looking back at what has been the existing core priorities. We'll also talk about some ideas for new measures of our student success going forward. As a school district, as this slide says, we are committed to knowing how our students are doing and to making key judgments about their need based on that type of data. Tonight, we're going to review data in the following four areas: district demographics over time, data and information on reading, data and information on algebra and geometry, and data and information about attendance. We're doing that because those have been the benchmarks that the district has been using, and this will be our closing report on those benchmarks, and next year we will report out on the new benchmarks that the Board of Education recently approved. So let's go a little bit deeper into our demographics as a school district. I've already shared quite a bit of information with you about this, but I haven't told the whole tale. This slide here just shows visually the change in our race-ethnic population over the number of years since 1991 to our current year. And you can see the increasing numbers of students of color in the school district. In 1999, white students comprised 68% of district enrollment. In 2010, 50%. Our fastest growing subgroup of students is our Hispanic students, which were 5% of the district in 99 and 15% in 2010. The number of students considered low income has increased, as I shared with you, and in particular over the past 5 years, where today 40% of our students reside in low income households. And that just shows you a pattern of increase of our kids in terms of those that qualify for services. Let's look at our enrollment with special education. Interestingly, there, the proportion and number of students which receive special education students has remained fairly stable since 2000, about 400 students, or about 16% of our district population, qualify for types of program based on disabilities that they have. Let's look at ESL, English as a Second Language, or our ELL, English Language Learners Program. That enrollment in that program has continued steadily with an upward trend again in 2009-10, and that began about 10 years ago. This year, we have over 3,800 students of our 25,000 students, and again, 16% of our total of kids that qualify for English as a second language service. This is a chart that talks about our different language groups in the district. I told you before that we have 65 language groups. Obviously, we know that they're not all large groups, but you can see 19,000 of our 25,000 native language English, about 3,000 native language Spanish, 740 Hmong, 226 Mandarin Chinese. And that I'm sharing this with you as another illustration of the dynamics and the demographics of those that we serve in our school district. Let's dig a little deeper into that reading goal. Previous goal read that all students will complete third grade able to read at grade level or beyond. Certainly that goal has been written with a lot of stretch in it, which is an important thing. What this particular slide shows, and you have a handout of it, and don't worry about the details of any of these slides, is that district-wide, 5% of our students scored proficient or advanced in reading on the 2008-09 WKC, which is a 1% increase. Proficient means you're reaching the standard. Advanced means that you're beyond having reached the standard. So the first few slides show it around percent proficient and advanced. Within that data set, it shows that Southeast Asian and African American students posted increases in the percent of proficient or higher reading level in 2007-08 and 2008-09. Something that we do feel good about, but yet we know within that data there's clearly room for improvement. This slide shows the word FAPE. What that means is that it stands for full academic year. Kids in our school for the full academic year by race, ethnic, racial group, and by socioeconomic status. And what it tells us is that there's greater variation existing across ethnic, racial subgroups for low-income students versus non-low-income students in terms of their proficiency levels, meaning that there's quite a bit of scatter within that group of kids. The greatest gap, and we told you tonight, we talked about our strength, and we told you tonight that we talked about our needs, exists between Hispanic and white students. 15% of non-low-income Hispanic students, meaning not qualifying for community resources, perform below proficient, compared to 7% of our white students. Gap between non-low-income African-American and white students performing below proficient is two points, 9% compared to 7%, whereas the gap between low-income students for those same groups is 28%, the difference between 49% and 21%, clearly pointing out one of the challenges that we face as a school district around family. Next slide is about WKCE grade 4 reading again. Again, around proficient advanced, dealing with gender. What this tells us is there's a slightly higher proportion of female students scoring proficient or advanced in reading compared to males. That, by the way, is somewhat of a trend demographically around the country, to the point where some organizations, school districts, are beginning to focus on gender achievement gap issues. That's not as clear in our profile by any means. And below on income groups, the gap in reading proficiency between students in low-income households and those living in non-low-income households decreased slightly between 2007-08 and 2008-09. That is too something that shows a positive trend. This is a chart that's showing reading for our ELL students. The proportion of ELL students scoring proficient or higher is stable, while the proportion of non-ELL students is indicating the need and achievement gap around our English and second language students. The bottom chart is regarding our students with disabilities. In 2008-09, the proportion of special education students who scored proficient or higher did increase by 1%. But if you compare that to all students, you clearly see some related gaps in the addressing students. Now, on this chart, we're flipping we're not talking about proficient and advanced anymore. We're talking about what's called minimal performance, which is the minimal level on those proficiency scores. The first one deals with ethnic racial groups, and it shows that African American, Hispanic, and Southeast Asian students had a decline in the percent of students scoring minimal on the WKCE reading test, something to feel good about, meaning that they're moving into these other categories. But at the same time, you cannot take whole comfort in where we are, as you can see with some of the coming data. Again, minimal performance on gender. Males who scored at the minimal level decreased by 1%, while the percentage of females scoring minimal decreased by 2%. Again, kind of trending in the right direction. Again, because the goal has to be to eliminate percentages of children at that minimal level. So anytime you see it pushing in that direction, although we need to push higher in that direction, that is a good. And again, relative to income groups on the bottom, 15% of students in low-income households scored minimal in reading, down by 2% from the prior year. That's a good thing. Although versus 2% of students in non-low-income households who scored minimal, which was unchanged from the previous year. So there's a kind of a good news piece in there, and also the challenge. We're concluding a little bit about reading. This one, again, is full academic year. Again, the percentage of kids scoring at minimal, a Among low-income students, the achievement gap is greatest among African-American students as measured by the minimal performance in reading. Reaffirming the fact that we have defined achievement gaps that must be addressed. And the good news is we've identified that repeatedly, and we've also identified strategies in our strategic plan to address that. Again, minimal for fourth grade reading. Among non-low-income students, the achievement gap as measured by minimal performance decreased for African-American students. That is a good sign as well. You know, one of the things about No Child Left Behind, I know it's obviously been criticized, and I've been one of the critics myself, but what it causes us to do is to have to break this data apart, keep breaking the data apart, because averages are not, we can no longer focus on this report tonight was about averages only, it would be about a different set of data. We can't do that. Legally, we can't do that, and morally, ethically, we can't do that. Let's focus on the algebra by end of ninth grade and geometry by the end of 10th grade. Let's see what we're doing there. Algebra completion by the beginning of grade 10 continued to rise for the majority of all ethnic and racial subgroups as of 2009-10. That's a good trend. The largest relative gain between the previous year of measure and this year was with our white students. And again, you can see gaps. Just look across those groups. In terms of gender and income groups, both male and females continue to successfully complete algebra by grade 10 at an increasing rate over the past 5 years. In terms of income, the number of students who successfully completed algebra by grade 10 at the beginning of 2009-10 increased by 8%. For low-income students and 4.3% for non-low-income students. That's a gratifying trend line as well. Algebra completion beginning of grade 10, in terms of ELL students, increased by 2% over the prior year. That's a positive message. Special education, algebra completion by students receiving special education services by the beginning of grade 10 increased 5.8% this past year. The kind of trend that obviously we see, but you can still see as you look across on that bottom chart the gap between all students, special education students, and non-special education students. Again, reaffirming the work that we have ahead of us. This is geometry completion by the end of grade 11. As of the beginning of the 2009-10 school year, 68% of all students successfully completed geometry by grade 11. It increased by 4% for African American students, while the other subgroups saw a decrease. Prior year. You know, that's not a good way to describe overall elimination of gaps, because obviously we want rising tide for all children. While we're comforted by the increase in our African American students, we can't take pride in the fact that there are other students that still are away from the target. And this also shows us over time that our Asian students continue to be the most likely to complete geometry by the end of grade 11 than any other ethnic group. With gender, geometry completion among females continued to be higher than male counterparts. And then down below, the income groups, the rates for both students living in low-income households and students living in non-low-income households completing geometry fell slightly. So again, we look across the whole group. While we have some subgroup in there that's increasing, we have needs here as well. English language learners, we see decrease over the prior year by 4% of our special education students. Over three-fourths of our non-special education students continue to complete algebra, while the rate for students receiving special education services during that one from that 1 year fell by about 60%. That's an area of focus for us. Then finally, measure was in the area of 94% attendance at each grade level. Let's go through a similar analysis quickly. The attendance rate for elementary students as a group continued to be above the 94% goal. That's a goal over time that's being met. All ethnic subgroups except for African American will receive 93.5%, 0.5% below our target rate for 2008-09, 92.5 for 2007-08. So there's need within that. Relative to gender, both male and female students at the elementary continue to meet that 94% goal. Elementary students who live down below as income who live in non-low-income households meet the 94% attendance goal. Students, elementary kids who live in low-income households are also making this goal this year at 94.3%. So in terms of average daily attendance at the elementary level, if you look at it as an aggregate, that target is being met, and that was one of the reasons that in our strategic plan with the Board of Education's agreement, we decided to look at the measures for attendance. English language learners, we continue to see that goal being met, and we can also see the same for middle school, as a group, are meeting that goal over the past 8 years. When you look at the subgroups, Southeast Asian, other Asian, white and Hispanic, middle school students met the 94% goal, while African American students were at the middle level, about 2% below that target area. With gender, you can see it's pretty across the board, boys and girls meeting that at the middle school. And in terms of our income groups, you see low-income students attended at 93.5. So, you know, we're getting at that target, but in this case, you know, we don't get kids to the standards if they're not in school. And then middle school attendance with English language learners, you see some dropping below 94% for the first time in 9 years, where it dropped to 91.3%. Special education students, that goal was not met this past year, and there tended to be trend line slightly below that 94% in the last 11 years. Then let's look at high school attendance. The attendance rate of high school students as a group dropped from 90.7% to 89.9%. And what concerns us about this data, why there's a distinct focus on improving how students transition within our school district, is that whole notion of what happens with engagement, coming to school, having good attendance, as students move from middle school to high school. Our African American students at the high school increased from 84.6 to 87.1. We like the trend, but it's not at the 94%. Hispanic students increased about a couple percent. Southeast Asian students increased about 12%. In terms of gender, neither males nor females met the 94% target. Males had a slight increase in attendance rate from 90.8 to 91.9 in the last year. And then high school students from low income households on the bottom of 10 scores at a significantly lower rate than those from non low income households, 83.3% compared to 90.3%. One of the things that we can see in a school district is the cumulative challenge of family income issues affecting families and affecting kids, and the worry that we have in terms of, you know, if that's the dynamic within the family, you know, are there other pressures on the family that are causing problems? We think the answer is yes. English language learners increased from 85.6% to 89.2%. We like the trend, but again, it's not at the 94%. And special education students increased slightly from the prior year, from 87.1 to 87.5. Now, let me just conclude by providing just a summary, kind of trying to use this as a teachable moment, looking across all those different benchmarks. These are the current measures we've been working with. I'll start with the second bullet. District-wide, 75% of our students scored proficient or advanced in reading in 2008-09, which is a 1% increase. Southeast Asian and African American students posted increases in the percent proficient or higher in reading. However, the last comment is about the gap. The gap between white students and minority students shrunk for all but the Hispanic students in 2009. That's a good statement about shrinking of the gap, but the gap nonetheless exists. 90% of white students were proficient or higher in reading compared to 56% of African American students. That's a gap of 34% that obviously we have an obligation to face very directly. And 80% of Asian students, a gap of 10%. So obviously you can see some ratcheting up, but you have to look at the differences across all the subjects to know where our current measures with algebra and geometry, just some summary here. I won't go through all of these. The largest relative gains in algebra between the previous year measure was among white students. students living in low-income households who successfully completed algebra by grade 10 increased from the prior year. The gap in algebra completion between white students and minority compliant all blacks Asian students I'll just highlight that last, near the bottom, the gap between geometry completion for white students versus current minority students is as follows, where there's a gap of 36, a gap of 42 for our African American students, a gap of 30 for our Spanish students, and the Asian students have a higher algebra completion rate than white students. Obviously, things like, again, pattern is we see some things that are positive ones and we see some very distinct. Relative to attendance, in summary, the attendance rate for elementary kids is at or above 94% goal. All ethnic subgroups except for African American kids continue to meet the 94% goal. This is at the elementary level. And now, I'm not going to go through all of these because I know that at a point in time this is too much. But a month ago, based on the work that was done in our strategic plan, the Board of Education identified new performance measures. Referred to those just a minute ago, and they did because of having seen some things like around that attendance goal where we need to focus in other areas relative to attendance. It's not walking away from the attendance focus, but it's reshaping what the goal should be. And also because there are things in our plan that are clearly targeted not only to achievement gap issues, but the commitment to ensuring that achievement is improving for all students. So if you look at the first measure here, new core measure, the percentage proficient or higher in reading and math, that's a very similar demographic to what we've been selecting, to what I went through. But if you look at the second one, for example, where it talks about the percentage of kids at the 90th percentile or above, what that is saying is we want to be tracking high achievement. And we want to and need to be moving kids, more kids, to higher levels of achievement. So it's about higher achievement. It's not just about eliminating achievement gaps. I won't go through the rest of these measures, but I would advise that you go through the material and learn about them, because in future years we'll be reporting out data on those new measures. But in the interest of time, as well as understanding that it can be a lot, and we've provided you information and we're going to make ourselves available beyond tonight to answer any questions you have, I think it's important that we go to another place with our state of the district presentation tonight. And the reality of it is that, district level data is critically important. And knowing that we're improving and knowing that where we're not is important. But knowing about what's happening in our schools is probably more important. The work being done in the schools, because that's where the work happens in the school district. Each of our schools, in terms of their commitment to focusing on the improvement of learning. And what we thought we would do tonight is have Assistant Superintendent Sue Applenap and Assistant Superintendent Pam Nash come forward and talk to you about the work that's being done in our schools. It's with the understanding that we have a lot of pride in this place, but it's also with the understanding that we have a lot of improvement plans that we have to focus on, and a lot of commitments, new and some of them old commitments, that we're going to need to address if we're going to see improved data over the time that we have with each other. So with that, it's now my pleasure to introduce Sue Applenap.
Good evening, everyone. As Dr. Neera had stated that we're going to go through some of this information, but within your packet, you have on page 21 starts a lot of the information about the elementary schools, really focusing on the role of reading. So I'm not going to go over that in great detail. Instead, I'm going to try to give you a summary of what our schools are in elementary. First of all, we have 32 elementary schools. We have a range of 230 students, which is Marquette Elementary, to 700 students, which are actually a little bit under that, which is Leopold Elementary School. However, when you go into each of the schools, what you will notice is that you'll see a lot of consistency in curriculum as you go from school to school, with each school giving its own signature of doing their own thing. Our students spend a majority of time in schools. And a child can spend up to 10 hours every single day, from breakfast to having a full day of rich curriculum with core practices of reading, arts, music, bi-ed, having lunch, and then finishing off their day with after-school programming. For many children, that day starts at 7:30 in the morning and it ends at 5:30 at night. Our schools are also very child-centered with a very heavy emphasis on literacy. In elementary schools, it's really important for us to focus on that throughout the day. We have a balanced literacy program that has core measures attached to them, and each of our children are taught at their own individual rate. And that's important for us because we need to be able to teach children where they're not frustrated in order to get them to the next level of academic learning. And so literacy is the core of instruction, and it's integrated throughout the day in the elementary schools. And there's more on that starting on page 21. Our classrooms are also culturally relevant. As the parent from Hawthorne stated in the beginning, all children are welcome in the schools. And what we've been focusing on in the elementary schools is really examining best practices at a national level across the United States, figuring out what works best. And so this year we have two pilots in our elementary schools at Falk Elementary and Mendota, really focusing on some of the newest research. And we have a national partnership with, which is called CREATE, the Department of Public Instruction. And another thing about our schools is that we really try to work with all children, teaching them in the classroom first. And so by doing that, we follow a model of inclusion that emphasizes team teaching. So we have two classroom teachers with a specialist that work daily supporting the needs of all students. With this type of teaching, we wrap the services around the children, and we can meet children who have highly intensified needs all the way to children who really need enrichment beyond most of the peers in their classroom. So through this inclusion model, through this team teaching model, we are really able to look at disproportionality while really meeting the needs of all of our students, because two teachers working with a group of children is oftentimes better than in isolation, because they can problem solve so much more better around students. So that's become an important component. Our schools are also, what many people say, the heartbeat of the community. We, as in a regular function, you could see in any of the elementary schools, the gyms being used at night. There may be many organizations renting various rooms within the classrooms, and they're just constantly in motion. This year, recently, we have Lincoln Elementary School. That second semester just started a Saturday outreach program in which the building is open from 8 in the morning until about 11 o'clock, filled with activities on Saturday mornings. And so we're hoping to expand that even for next year. Our schools are also communities that can respond to crisis. The recent H1N1 is an example of administering shots for all of our children while they were available. And then we also have a crisis response team that supports our students and families whenever there is something happening within the building, and children need additional support, staff need additional support, and administrators need additional support. And so when we find out a crisis is happening, before Monday morning, if it happens on the weekend, there's a team sitting there in the building waiting and responding to support the schools and families and the students. And then our schools are also a safe place to learn. Several years ago, we started with the Cronenberg model. Those of you who have children in our district out there will understand the words above the line, below the line, and children clearly know where they are in that area. We've expanded that over the work of some national research from the positive behavior team that comes now into the schools, and are really helping teachers with staff development about where to, how to support students on teachable moments, where to build skills. And in this year, we have 16 elementary schools that have gone through the first level of that. With the support of the stimulus dollars recently, we'll be able to have all of the elementary schools trained in that by the end of next year. And so we really, really think that it's important for our schools to be safe, for the community to understand that, and to make sure that we are meeting the needs of all the students in our buildings. And then finally, schools need to be a fun place for kids. I can't emphasize that enough. I think a parent from Hawthorne emphasized that children love school and it's a fun place to be. Our children come into kindergarten wanting to learn, wanting to have fun, and so engaging children in every aspect of the curriculum, in every aspect of the day, is important for us. And in elementary, we try to keep that fun twist throughout the year as children do in kindergarten.
I'm Pam Nash, and I'm the assistant superintendent for middle and high schools. And I'm very, very proud to be talking to you about this subject this evening. First of all, we are incredibly fortunate in this community to have principals and staff who truly love and understand adolescents. That's key to any good middle school. It's key to any good high school as well. And so we are delighted with the fact that we have those individuals to work with. Middle school can't be captured on a slide. There's no way. There's no way to get the energy on that slide. There's no way to get the hormones up there. But we do have 11 middle schools. They're located in our neighborhoods throughout the city. And each school has its own unique personality. A couple of years ago, we made a valiant attempt and continue to work toward more consistency in what our middle schools offer, because we felt it was very important that our middle school students all had an experience that was not determined by geography, but was determined by a rich and consistent curriculum. And so we have done that and moved to a curriculum that requires some consistency around academics, world language, art, music, wellness, career exploration, technology, and other electives. And each middle school has also implemented, in fact, the middle schools were the pioneers in implementing positive behavior support in our schools. And what's important to take away from that is the notion that we no longer assume that kids come to school knowing how to do school, knowing exactly how to behave, knowing how to line up, knowing how to do a number of things. And so it's not fair to ask kids to do things they haven't been taught. And so positive behavior support, the emphasis is on education. The emphasis is on teaching kids on the best way to coexist with one another, the best way to approach adults, and the best way to simply learn. And it's been very, very successful in our middle schools. Our high schools, equally fond of. There are four very large, very comprehensive high schools, and Malcolm Shabazz, our alternative high school. Superintendent Nered already talked about the ACT, but I've got it up there again because we are very proud of not only of those high numbers, but of the fact that nearly 70% of our students take the ACT, which is a much, much higher figure than most districts. We are also involved at the high school level in a very large multi-million-dollar grant that is looking at the very thing that we've been talking about all night long, and that is the importance of relationships, the importance of that adult-student connection around high, meaningful, relevant curriculum. And schools are working together across the district. This is very new and very different. We used to have four separate kingdoms, so to speak, and now we are working together to provide that better curriculum, that more relevant curriculum, and the intent for every high school right now, the intent for every teacher and the intent for every principal, is that we prepare students in such a way that they can determine the next steps after high school. We want them that well prepared so it is not a decision determined by a lack of a curriculum or lack of intervention or whatever the case may be. We want students to have that opportunity to determine the next step in their lives. Our high schools, and we do need to mention, have incredibly strong athletic and extracurricular programs. It's not unusual for us to have a state champion. And our extracurriculars remain kind of extracurriculars where students indicate to our high school principals that there is an interest area that's not being served. We form a club around it. And that's why Monty Python still lives today in many of our schools. Our fine arts is another area that our high schools and middle schools do an outstanding job in. And I really believe that many of our performing groups, our forensic teams, our arts are world class. And then lastly, but certainly not the least, I wanted to mention that Shabazz remains, started out and remains, a national leader in the other, in the area of service.
Sue and Pam, thank you very much. It's a good reminder that the work is in the schools, a place called school. Over the past many months, the Board of Education has approved, in addition to all the other work that's being done, four reports that represent priority areas of focus for us as a school district. While each area has its complete report, and it's not my intention to go through the entire four plans, I do want to share some very brief information about these reports to help you, our community, know that they too are areas of highlight and focus for us. In terms of the Equity Task Force, that information in the State of the District report provides the basis for measuring future progress in meeting the following three goals. The district will eliminate gaps in access, opportunities, and achievement by recognizing and addressing historic and contemporary inequities. The district will recognize and eliminate inequitable policies and practices at the district level, and the district will recognize and eliminate inequity in and among schools. In the State of the District presentation is more data about the work that's being done in this area. There are three areas that we just want to point out as special areas of focus around this equity task force in terms of the current state of things. Our AVID program, advancement via individual determination, program that is now in all of our four comprehensive high schools, focusing on preparing first-generation college students to be able to attend college. The work we're doing in cultural relevancy within the curriculum, and we have some schools that are in pilot work around that, and the expansion of dual language immersion programs within the district. Our fine arts task force, things that are being focused on this year, our curriculum development work in both music and the visual arts. There's a lot of work that's been done to inventory our current resources to know where gaps exist, and a focus on community partnerships and this whole concept of how arts can have liaison work with community. In terms of the math task force, mathematics staff will be provided professional development aimed at continuous improvement in leadership and in quality instructional practices, and the middle school math specialist program, which we had in fact a meeting on right before this State of the District presentation. The district will continue to work towards the implementation of common balanced mathematics resources at the elementary level and common course resources at the high school level to ensure consistency across the district, as Pam spoke to. And then all mathematics division work will remain focused on implementing research-based instructional strategies to eliminate our achievement gaps. The next report deals with the Talented and Gifted Plan, where we have specific focus wide-ranging plan this year on identifying assessment tools so we can have a more comprehensive identification system in the district. The TAG staff are working with principals for this spring in order to implement what's called cluster grouping for this next school year. And then we're also focusing on ensuring course offerings at the high school level, our advanced courses, have greater consistency across the district. And then with that in mind, I want to focus on one other area that's been very recent, and I mentioned it a little bit in my beginning remarks. This area is four-year-old kindergarten. This is, in fact, an area that the district and community have focused on for many years. And the reason for this focus has to do with the data that indicates the benefits of early learning programs, not only for the children and families served by them, but also for the community and the potential reduction in future costs in the areas of special education, for example. On our website is some recent and current information that is discussing the cost-benefit analysis of early learning programs. We want to be able to share and need to share that information with you. Recently, the board approved the implementation of this program in the fall of 2011. You need to know that currently we are one of a very small number of districts in the state and a very small number of urban districts that do not have four-year-old kindergarten. Tonight, I want to take a minute to personally thank the Board of Education, our fine community partners who worked with us in developing our plan, school district staff members who were instrumental in working with the community partners, and I also want to thank MTI, who partnered with us in recent negotiations to allow the implementation of a school and community model the four-year-old kindergarten. Whether you call it four-year-old kindergarten or not, this is more of an example of school and community working together. And I think that effort, more than what you label it, deserves a round of applause for all those people that helped advance this agenda. And we have just one more area that we want to explore with you tonight. The reality is no district story is complete today without information about the budget. And tonight, as part of this State of the District presentation, we want you to provide an overview of cover a small portion of a look into the 2010-11 school year. I'm not going to cover a lot of that because we intend to do that in February 1st, if you're more than welcome to come, at the Board of Education regular committee meeting. The Madison Metropolitan School District is in a financial position but remains strong after the completion of the 2008-09 school year. That saw the district add approximately $10.8 million to the school district fund balance. Now that statement alone, I don't want to be misleading. It doesn't mean to limit the fact that the Board of Education sitting here tonight and previous boards didn't have to make extremely tough decisions. And it's also not intended to give false impressions that there's not extremely tough decisions that are going to be happening already for the 2010-11 school year. It's a fact that we have done some good things through effective fiscal management to provide opportunities for kids here in our school district. This led into the 2009-10 budget being built with an overall expenditure increase of approximately $2.2 million. This increase in budgeted expenditures also included a property tax increase of approximately $7.9 million, or 3.5% over prior years, which we felt was pretty good in this tough economic time. And I'll touch on a little bit on how we were able to minimize that. The revenues budgeted for the 2009-10 school year increased by approximately $10.7 million, or roughly 3.3% over the prior year. This budget in 2009-10 also targeted the use of fund balance, and we had an ability to restructure debt in order to hold down property tax increases for the 2009-10 school year. These use of fund balances from the General Operating Fund, Debt Service Fund, and Community Services Fund in total allowed the school board to reduce property tax increases by approximately $7.3 million for the 2009-10 school year. The 2009-10 school year saw Madison Metropolitan School District receive approximately $11.7 million in targeted American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds, also known as stimulus dollars. These funds are targeted for Title I and IDEA special ed flow-through and are meant to supplement existing district programs. They were not meant to replace existing district programs. Unfortunately, Madison Metro School District also saw a 15% reduction and funding from the state of Wisconsin, which relatively equates to $9 million for the 2009-10 school year. And unfortunately, we are projecting the same percentage decrease for 2010-11. In the fall of 2008, preparing for the 2009-10 budget, administration at that time projected a budget gap of $8 million. In November of 2008, voters here in Madison approved a three-year recurring operating referendum for $5 million in 2009-10, $4 million in 2010-11, and $4 million in 2011-12. This approved referendum provided what we called a shared cost plan between property taxpayers and the school district, where property taxpayers in the first year would cover roughly $5 of the $8 million, and the school district was committed to either reducing programs and services or finding efficiencies to cover the last $3 million. Unfortunately, in the spring of 2009, updated projections showed a budget gap closer to $3.9 million, or an increase of $900,000. Administration at that time brought forward a plan that included revenue enhancements and expenditure reductions to balance this gap.
without the need to impact classroom-based programs. These included a reduction of 45 FTE of unallocated teachers and educational assistants that were historically budgeted but not used. Streamlining transportation from 4 providers to 2 providers that provided approximately $1 million of savings to the school district. And a debt service payoff due to a 2008-2009 TIF payment from the City of Madison to the school district. The preliminary budget the Board of Education approved in May of 2009 also provided for the addition of class and a half and Ready Set Goal programming for the 2009-10 school year. The class and a half program alone increased staffing by 21.2 FTE as this program was restored for 2009-10. In the summer and fall of 2009, the state of Wisconsin biennial budget saw our school district lose approximately $9 million, or that 15% I alluded to from the state of Wisconsin. It also caused the school district to create a further budget gap above and beyond the $3.9 million to approximately $2.8 million. This additional budget gap was caused by the state decreasing the amount school districts received per pupil from $275 to $200 in 2009-10, along with further decreases to state-funded programs, such as funds for special education and bilingual education specifically. Administration once again presented expenditure reductions to balance the budget that did not directly impact programs within the classroom. These included reduction to the Board of Education contingency fund, elementary teacher salary budget reduction due to historical staffing salaries and the vacancy rate, and reduction in substitute teacher budgets due to historical analysis. Further, in the final stages of the 2009-10 budget approval process in October of 2009, the Board of Education took the following actions to reduce the impact on local property taxpayers. First, they were able to eliminate community services fund indirect cost transfer, which is a budget line item to cover things such as utilities when our communities are in their buildings. They eliminated the Board of Education contingency in the community services fund. They eliminated the remaining levy in the debt service fund. We had restructured a lot of our debt, and they were able to cover that payment through normal operating funds instead of levying the property tax specifically for that. They deferred taxing for the Walgreens property tax settlement into the future budget year. Foregone levying authority for a portion of the final year of the maintenance referendum. And finally, reallocated community service fund expenditures back to the general fund. Finally, administration plans to release, as I had talked about earlier, to the board and community any necessary budget gap that will be needed to be met for the 2010-11 school year. Administration remains committed to finding as many efficiencies and expenditure reductions that do not impact classroom programs to help close this gap moving forward into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you very much for that overview of our financial situation and reminding us of all the decisions that have been made over the past many, many months. Let me now end where we began with some personal statements about our district. Please join me in welcoming Betsy Sato, an 8th grade English and ESL teacher at Hamilton Middle School, Darian Henderson, a 12th grade student at Memorial High School, and Jenna Acker, a guidance counselor at LaFalle High School. If you could please come up, they have some statements that they want to read, and then I have some very brief closing remarks.
Kalins, Hine, Hoffman, Doyle, Crossmeyers, Anderson, Egan, Steppelberg. Not just names from my past, but unforgettable MMSD teachers who helped to inspire me in the 70s and 80s. In the last 19 years, I have taught in both public and private schools in 2 different states and 2 foreign countries. For my own children's education and a fulfilling career, I chose to return to MMSD. MMSD is a community that provides educational opportunities, support, diversity, security, and a sense of belonging for its students, parents, and staff. As a child, I was eager to attend school every morning. Many years later, I still am. And just as my teachers in MMSD made an impact on my life, I hope to make a difference in the lives of my students.
Hi, I'm Darren Henderson, and I'm a senior at James Madison Memorial High School. It's a bittersweet feeling knowing I'm leaving the hallways of my youth. With all the great opportunities that high school offers, I have been able to open my mind to new ideas and build new friendships. Because of the helpful connections I have made with faculty, I have been able to be a part of different leadership groups at Memorial. These experiences include Student Voice, Student Senate, and mentoring at elementary and middle feeder schools with presentations on violence, peer pressuring, and bullying. Overall, high school has not only provided me with an education, but also with leadership skills. These skills were reinforced through many varsity sports, which inspired me to reach out to the community. All of these activities that I have been a part of have helped me prepare for different challenges throughout my life. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jenna Aker. Our school is rich in tradition, but accepting of change. Collaboration is not just a buzzword anymore, it is our action. We are a community high school filled with diversity, leadership, and high expectations. We are enriched by the partnership and resources our community has provided us. We are encouraged by our students and their resiliency and strength. A significant percentage of our staff are former students and Pierce advocates. We are a staff that is not afraid to roll up our sleeves to work hard to make a difference and improve the quality of education. We are proud of where we have been, focused on what we can become. We are La Follette High School, one component of the Madison School District.
Betsy, Darian, Jenna, thank you very much for helping us know about your story as a student and as staff members of our school district. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell the audience that we also have to thank Darian. So tonight is her birthday, and she decided to spend it with us here tonight. So thank you very much. Happy birthday. Tonight was about our story, our mission, our beliefs, our future priorities. It was also about information about our students and staff and how our students are doing. We do have a lot to be proud of. We also have a significant recognition of the long way that we have to go to ensure that all kids are reaching our standards and that they're developing ways in ways that would make them happy and their families proud. We wanted to provide you information about key district reports, and we did that briefly. We also wanted to talk about our schools and our financial situation. We end with our thanks to all of you that care about this great institution. We end with our need to seek your help in telling our story and seek your help in helping our students. What we cannot do alone as a school district, we can do together. Let us pledge to continue the dialogue about our children. That will be my commitment to you as a superintendent of schools. And now I would end by letting you know that we have a few minutes for a few questions. So thank you all very, very much for coming tonight. And let's just see what we have for questions. If you have a question, we do need you to be able to come up to the mic so it gets captured on the MMSD TV. So if you could give your name and then just ask your question. I may need others to help me with response, but let's just see where we go. And we're having the answer, yes, that information is available. Are you having a difficulty finding it? Well, here's what I would ask you to do. The man right in the back there waving his hand, he'll give you the direction. We want you to get that information. How about anyone else? Please, come forward.
My name is Jane Dowdy. I'm the mother of two National American Honor Finalists. One graduated in 2008, the other is currently a senior at West College. children were in elementary school, it was clear that many of their fellow students were high-ability kids. But as the years went by, fewer and fewer of them were in the advanced classes that my sons took. And when the national merit lists were announced in the fall of their senior year, many of those same students were not on them. I understand that national merit is just one measure of achievement, but I have to believe that if more of the kids who exhibited high ability in the early grades were identified and consistently nurtured early on, MMSD would have even more national merit semifinals. Which brings me to my question. Why, if we currently have over seven times the national average of semifinalists, is MMSD arbitrarily limiting our tag identification and subsequent programming to the national average, which is 2% of the student population? It is clear to me that easily 14% of MMSD students belong in that pool of students and that they need to be identified as such in order to reach their highest potential, as stated in the new strategic plan.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, before we can identify a percentage, we have to create an identification system. And whatever that system is should lead, if we implement it well, to a comprehensive identification of students. I can tell you that despite whatever numbers have been out there, that we have not established any percentage. Because I want the identification method consistently implemented to drive whatever that number is. And let's see what happens with that, and we'll have another conversation, obviously depending on that outcome. But I think first and foremost, we need to get about systematically identifying gifted and talented students. That is our commitment. We need to have plans in place for many of them, just as you said, to nurture their development. And I believe that we'll get there, but I also believe that we have a lot of work ahead of us. Thank you very much.
Do you have an anticipated time when we will have that identification process?
As the plan has identified, it has specific dates in the plan. We're looking at some pilots this spring yet relative to the identification. And based on those, the outcome of those pilots, my hope is that we'll be in place for some more steps with identification next school year, with the understanding that overall, this is a very comprehensive format because it's more than academics that we need to be identifying students in. And so the whole identification system will take a number of years, to have it in place. And we need to work away at it. We need to get the first place pieces in place. And then we'll keep adding all those components like leadership and creativity and all of that. We'll get there. Thank you. How about anyone else? Yes, please. Sure. You're correct. We did complete that survey. Our intention is to complete it every couple of years to have us listen to some new data around that. I mean, there were a variety of things that we learned. We learned that in some instances, those choices were made for very personal reasons. And then in other cases, while there were personal reasons, it had to do with this whole notion of the perception of the school district in meeting the needs of their children. I think that that's what has us wanting to have conversations about are there areas that we can offer more differentiated programming? And in no way are we going to be able to meet every unique individual need as an institution, but we want to have conversations that, reflect the data that was learned in that survey. There was information in that survey that talked about better meeting the needs of advanced learners in the school district. I mean, I think that was the underpinning of why we needed to create a TAG plan. I mean, it reinforced the work that was being done in creation of that plan. And so those are just a couple things that come to mind. If you want a copy of that full report, just contact my office. We'll get you to the full report. Thank you very much. How about one more? And then we're available if you have questions that you want to come up and ask us afterward. Anyone else? Yes, please, come on. Well, there were two hands. There was a tie. We'll take both questions. No, I understand.
My name is Kelly Sorensen. I'm actually one of those parents who did leave Madison School District for in favor of the Oregon School District about 4 years ago. My son is in second grade now, and he is now confirmed a twice exceptional learner, meaning he's both gifted and learning disabled. And so I like to keep track of how MMSC is doing, because as Madison goes, so go the suburbs. So one of the questions I had, it's been said to me that meeting my son's more advanced learning needs is as important, if not more important, than meeting his deficits, than working on his deficits. So one question I had was with regard to the cluster grouping. Could you define what cluster grouping means in Rollers?
So do you want to come up and feel that?
As I spoke earlier about working in teams of teachers, what we have in many of our schools is two teachers working together, and so we cluster students with similar needs so that we can meet their needs that they have. So basically, we cluster children that may have IEPs in a classroom, and so we'll have two teachers working in a class of 15 each, because we're a SAGE school district, and so we will cluster up to 30% in any of the classrooms, and so then the teachers will share resources and a special education teacher that will work with them. We also cluster children that have English as a second language, so our ELL students are also clustered. So then the ESL teacher will then come and help the two classroom teachers as they work through that. We also cluster our TAG students, and we'll continue to cluster them in a greater degree in the years coming, and then having the two teachers and providing outside resources from the district or using our coaches that we have within our building, which are called instructional resource teachers, to support that team to meet the needs of those students. And so clustering happens in very different levels at varying degrees. And it's not a perfect system, because as the year moves through, we have mobility of students and lines start to merge, but what we have is identified areas in which students can have additional support through the support of additional teachers in that teen teaching unit.
Final question from one of our community partners, Betsy Barhorst, the president of Madison Area Technical College. If I knew all the others, I...
Just a comment, not executive question. I've been a president in Iowa, in Waterloo. I've been a vice president in Peoria, Illinois, and in all of these experiences, I've been closely related to, closely worked with the school district. And I just want to say to you, you have no idea how wonderful this school district is compared to the other places that I've been. I really mean it. So. I could go on and give you specifics that I've outlined because I'm an academic, but you don't need to hear all that.
Betsy, thank you very much. And most important, thank you all for coming tonight and being present to learn more about our district. I mean, even with different vantage points, whether you have children with us or not, it's all about what the kids of this community need, and we all need to be in conversation and dialogue, and we'll get to better places for them. So we're inspired by the fact that you chose to come to be with us tonight. And we thank you, and we're more than willing to respond to questions and to contact us. And with that, I'll turn it over to Arlene to close our meeting tonight. The board.
Just quickly, on behalf of the Board of Education, again, we'd like to thank you for attending this evening. Thank you, Superintendent, three assistant superintendents, for your time in presenting. It was a nice job. If any of you have any other questions, you can always contact us by email. We have an email address that is board@madison.k12.wi.us. Comes to the entire board in the superintendent's office as well, so feel free to contact us. And now, our favorite moment of the night, motion to adjourn. All in favor? Thank you.